Good evening. In the news tonight, the peace deal between the U.S. and Russia over Syria has stalled.
We felt that we came to the point with Russia where we weren't reaching the same goal.
In Greece, austerity measures lead to protests. Another problem at Indian Point is in focus.
The oil spill is about the 15th significant mishap at Indian Point in the last year and a half.
The latest on the campaign trail, and education activists leave the city for Albany.
And our schools need the proper resources to provide the quality education that all children should have.
With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, October 3rd, 2016. Beginning with international news, today the U.S. State Department says the U.S. is suspending bilateral talks with Russia aimed at ending the violence in Syria. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says more than 400 civilians have been killed in and around the northern city of Aleppo since the U.S. and Russia brokered a ceasefire. It collapsed 2 weeks ago on September 19th. It was followed by an intensive bombing campaign which hit infrastructure, hospitals, and water stations, this in the besieged eastern part of Aleppo, which houses 275,000 people. Sunday, Syrian-controlled media released footage which claims to show a hospital in Aleppo pummeled to the ground. Today, as the U.S. suspended talks with Russia, it accuses it of not living up to commitments under the ceasefire agreements. Elizabeth Trudeau is with the State Department.
The Russians made very clear that they would not cease the attacks that we're seeing, that we saw this weekend, that we saw the attack against the hospital. You know, as we engaged in this dialogue with the Russians, you know, our main points were always clear. Humanitarian access, the reestablishment of a cessation of hostilities. We felt that we came to the point with Russia where we weren't reaching the same goal.
And today, Russian President Vladimir Putin suspended a treaty with Washington on cleaning up weapons-grade plutonium, signaling he's willing to use nuclear disarmament as a new bargaining chip in disputes with the U.S. over Ukraine and Syria. Shame on you. That's what elderly protesters shouted in Greece today as Greek police fired tear gas and pepper spray at protesting pensioners, this near the office of Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras. His left-wing government faces mounting pressure over planned austerity measures. These include cuts on pensions. This is part of bailout commitments by Greece to international lenders, with the International Monetary Fund pressing for tougher measures. Turning to Colombia, in Sunday's referendum, Colombia voters narrowly rejected an agreement signed by the president and rebel leaders, with 50.2% rejecting the deal. The deal would have ended their 52-year civil war. Matthew Wells reports.
It was signed between President Juan Manuel Santos and the FARC leader Timoleon Jimenez after almost 4 years of negotiations. The UN chief, Ban Ki-moon, said the UN would immediately offer assistance to keep Colombia on the path to lasting peace.
To support them, I have urgently dispatched my special representative, Mr. Zhang Anor, to Havana to continue his consultation. In Cartagena, I witnessed the profound desire of the Colombian people to end the violence. I count on them to press ahead until they achieve secure and lasting peace.
President Santos said he would not resign and vowed to continue working to keep the peace deal alive, together with the FARC leadership. He said the bilateral ceasefire would remain in place, according to news reports. Matthew Wells, United Nations.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. In local news on Friday, New York State was notified that an unspecified amount of oil leaked from a heat exchanger into the discharge canal at the Indian Point nuclear facility. Governor Andrew Cuomo toured the site. He said remediation is underway.
The nuclear plant that is located to the most dense population anywhere on the globe. God forbid there's an accident here, it would be a serious, serious situation.
Paul Galay is with Riverkeeper.
The oil spill is about the 15th significant mishap at Indian Point in the last year and a half, and that is way too many. There's too much threat to the environment and too much threat to our health and safety. We can close Indian Point tomorrow, and we need to do so.
Riverkeeper says Indian Point is falling apart at the seams.
It's leaking radiation into the ground. It's leaking oil into the Hudson River. The bolts holding the core of the reactors are failing at never-before-seen levels. Governor Cuomo has said that keeping Indian Point open when it's this broken down and we have enough replacement power, quote, defies common sense and basic sanity, end quote. It's time to get serious about closing Indian Point. We need a timetable from our elected officials, and we need it now.
In other local news, education activists are marching to Albany. They are demanding that the state make good on $3.9 billion it owes to New York City and to state public schools. This is a result of a court decision in the Campaign for Fiscal Equity lawsuit. It determined that public schools are underfunded. Gretchen Morgenthaler is on the march.
I'm marching because I have a son who's been in public school. He's 14 now, and I've seen what the lack of funding has done for his education, and I've seen, arts and music and theater cut from schools when he was very young. And when I started to look into why that was, I learned about the Campaign for Fiscal Equity. And it turned out that Robert Jackson was in my district, and he's the person who started the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, which, as you probably know, was a way of bringing attention to the fact that our schools are grossly underfunded. And I saw it in action with my son and then the schools that he had gone to. So ever since realizing that, I've been involved with a lot of things having to do with education, and always really supportive of bringing awareness to the fact that our schools are owed money and our schools need the proper resources to provide the quality education that all children should have.
Another parent, Angela Garcia, is also on the march to Albany.
I am fighting because just like the governor can back charter schools, I think he should back all of our schools. I'm not against charters per se, but they receive funding. So all charter schools prove is that with resources and the tools and the administrative support that you get to run your school, you get results. That's all they prove. So we're here fighting again. I have a child with an IEP who doesn't necessarily get all the resources that he needs. I've took on a second job.
Individual educational plan.
And so I've had to work to get him a lot of services outside of school. I've been able to do that with two jobs. So many parents cannot afford to do that. So we shouldn't have to fight.
Marchers are expected to arrive in Albany by next Thursday, October 11th. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. On the campaign trail today, New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman found that the Trump Foundation is in violation of state law. It ordered it to cease fundraising. Last week, the Washington Post reported that the Trump Foundation never obtained registration it needed in New York to request donations over $25,000 from the public. In more problems for the Trump campaign, over the weekend, the AP revealed allegations by former Apprentice contestants, members of the crew, and editors on their reality TV show about Donald Trump's years on the series. They say he demeaned women with sexist language. The campaign issued a broad denial, calling the claims totally false. This comes on the heels of revelations by Hillary Clinton at the end of the debate last week that Trump disparaged a former Miss Universe. Donald Trump spent most of his time last week obsessing over this. And USA Today, which has never endorsed a presidential candidate in all its years, endorsed Clinton. The editorial board called Trump erratic, ill-equipped to be commander-in-chief, and a serial liar who traffics in prejudice. Audio of Hillary Clinton at a Virginia fundraising event was used by Republicans to warn away young voters.
Some are new to politics completely. They're children of the Great Recession, and they are living in their parents' basement. They feel that they got their education, and the jobs that are available to them are not at all what they envision for themselves, and they don't see much of a future. I met with a group of young black millennials today, and you know, one of the young women said, you know, none of us feel like we have the job that we should have gotten out of college. And we don't believe that the job market is going to give us much of a chance. So that is a mindset that is really affecting their politics. And so if you're feeling that you're consigned to, you know, being a barista or, you know, some other job that doesn't pay a lot and doesn't have much of a ladder of opportunity attached to it, then the idea that maybe, just maybe, you could be part of a political revolution is pretty appealing. So I think we all should be really understanding of that, and we should try to do the best we can, not to be, you know, a wet blanket on idealism. You want people to be idealistic, you want them to set big goals, but to take what we can achieve now and try to present them as bigger goals.
The audio was released by a Republican strategist who runs a conservative blog at the Washington Free Beacon. Trump campaign manager Kellyanne Conway tweeted that Clinton was caught mocking Americans. She hates coal miners, baristas, Sanders idealists. However, on Sunday, Bernie Sanders told CNN he is in full agreement with Clinton.
If you listen to the whole discussion that she had, a very important point that she made is that a lot of young people who went into debt, worked very hard to get a good education, get out of school and can't find jobs commensurate with the education that they received. And there's a lot of unhappiness about young people, and this is an issue that we must address.
And Sanders urges voters to take a hard look, not at Clinton or at Trump, but the needs of the American people.
And issue by issue, whether it is climate change, whether it is Citizens United, the need to overturn that, whether it is pay equity for women, whether it is raising the minimum wage to a living wage, rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, a tax system that says to Trump and his friends, they are going to start paying their fair share of taxes. Look at Clinton's positions, look at Trump's positions, understand that one or the other of those two will be the next president of the United States. And after you take a hard look at those two candidates and their issues, I think the conclusion that the vast majority of people will reach is that Clinton is far and away the superior candidate.
Bernie Sanders commenting this weekend on CNN's State of the Nation. As far as Gary Johnson, the Libertarian presidential candidate, is concerned, the Detroit News came out for him. But Johnson has become the brunt of late-night comics for his lack of knowledge and his bizarre behavior. In an interview with MSNBC's Chris Matthews of Hardball, Johnson struggled to name a foreign leader.
Who's my favorite?
Any, just name anywhere in the country, any one of the continents, any country. Name one foreign leader that you respect and look up to. You got to do this anywhere, any continent. Canada, Mexico, Europe over there, Asia, South America, Africa. Name a foreign leader that you respect.
I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment. The former president of Mexico.
Which one?
I'm having a brain.
Name anybody.
Meanwhile, Clinton advisors and potential third-party voters worry that Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson and Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Jill Stein will take votes away from Clinton, that the third candidate vote would be a vote for Donald Trump. Bob Burtman is campaign advisor to Green Party vice presidential candidate Ajamu Baraka. He says the Green Party understands that perspective.
We have been voting based on fear and based on the least objectionable candidate. Our motto in this campaign is don't waste your vote, invest your vote. If there's going to be any alternatives that are acceptable in the future, we can't just be locked into this two-party duopoly that has lowered the bar year after year, election after election. There's got to be an alternative. And in order to build this, even if you think that there's not even a remote chance that the Green Party or the Libertarians, for that matter, can succeed, you have to start somewhere. And achieving critical mass needed to sustain this movement into the future is as much what this campaign is about as actually winning the election with higher numbers. I mean, the odds of that obviously are long. It's theoretically possible, But it's really about movement building and looking to the future.
The Commission on Presidential Debates has excluded Ajamu Baraka from the vice presidential debate to be held Tuesday evening in Virginia, just as Dr. Jill Stein was excluded from the presidential debate. However, just as Stein did, Ajamu Baraka is going to provide his responses to debate questions in real time from a studio in Richmond, Virginia. The virtual debate will be live streamed on Facebook and carried on Democracy Now! On Free Speech TV and Link TV. Burtman says the Democratic and Republican parties don't want any perspectives other than the official two, that Ajamu Baraka's perspective is completely different from main party choices in Tim Kaine and Mike Pence.
Basically, Ajamu's history as a human rights activist, both domestically and around the world, informs his perspective on the issues. He believes that the human rights framework should be applicable across the board and is a good window to setting policy on our domestic problems as well as our foreign policy. And in every way, that differs from the actions and perspectives of Tim Kaine and Mike Pence.
Burtman says Baraka's approach is a people-centered, movement-based, bottom-up, grassroots approach.
The experience of being on the ground in the affected communities, both here and internationally, informs the approach that you take. So you look for things that work. We don't necessarily look for things that work in our current political environment. We look for things that we believe ideologically should work or have to work, and then when they don't, we're kind of hamstrung. But we have a different approach, which is to look at things that are successful, where change has actually occurred. Like with agriculture, you know, there's this whole revolution on the ground in agriculture and organic foods and sustainable practices. That all started at the grassroots level. And so we can set ag policy based on how significantly the agricultural landscape has changed. It's not about subsidizing chemical agriculture and huge farms that are at risk of going bankrupt with one bad crop. It's about how do we support grassroots economies and local sustainable practices. And that approach applies across the board.
On Twitter, you can follow the virtual debate by going to @AjamuBaraka, and the hashtag is OccupyTheDebates. And just as the film by Greg Palast, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, investigates voter suppression by looking at long lines in communities of color which are meant to discourage voting, a new study comes up with these same findings. Erica Lattice reports.
As the presidential race tightens, voter turnout could play a decisive role, and a new study warns that some Americans may have a harder time casting ballots than others. Spencer Overton with the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies says data from the last presidential election points to serious shortcomings in how polling is managed in communities of color.
African Americans, on average, waited up to twice as long as whites to vote. Long lines reduce turnout and also cost time and money.
He says some black communities waited in line up to 7 hours to vote in 2012. Nationwide, the study found white voters waited an average of 12 minutes to vote, compared with 19 minutes for Latinos and 23 minutes for African Americans. Overton says long lines deterred at least 730,000 Americans from voting and notes that just over 500 votes were enough to determine the outcome of the 2000 presidential election. Lack of poll workers, voting machines, and cuts to the number of early voting days are largely responsible for the delays, Overton says. He points to a Pew study that found 1 in 8 registration records are invalid or have serious errors, making it hard to accurately predict resources needed to match voter turnout and then find voter records when they finally get to the front of the line.
Amusement parks and other public venues manage wait times and lines with a science called queuing theory, where they collect data and they make sure adequate resources are in place. This should be applied to voting.
He says to reduce wait times, states, counties, and cities should also adopt and enforce minimum wait time standards, provide adequate funding for voting machines and workers, expand early vote days, and add the option of voting by mail. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Galatis.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. In other news, water protectors have begun their seventh month of occupation near the North Dakota banks of the Missouri River to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline. Last week, police arrested 21 people, re-escalating their targeting of people organizing to stop the pipeline. Their opponents have staged the largest multi-tribal mobilization of Native Americans in generations. WBAI's Earth Mom in North Dakota spoke with Cody Hall. He's with the Red Warrior Camp. Red Warrior coordinates direct action taken by water protectors at the camps.
Cody, who exactly are the water protectors? What is a water protector?
We consist of everybody from all walks of life. Our common interest and our common goal is respecting the fact that we come from Mother Earth, that we recognize that. I mean, yeah, we may be from different shades of skin color, but essentially we all recognize that we do come from the earth, that we do come from water, and that our common goal is to protect what is given to us on a daily basis, what Mother Earth provides for us. We recognize those. It's simple. The food that we eat every day comes from Mother Earth. It's grown from water. And so all of us have the common knowledge and the common understanding that we come from this way of life, from all over the world. And so that makes us these defenders and protectors. And like I said, we all consist of one mind and one body, and we're here. And we heard that calling, and that's why we've all convened at this little land space.
What do you see coming up for the actions and also for the future of all the camps here in North Dakota?
Everybody's here for the long haul. We've stayed it for weeks on end now. We just have to get people ready for the winter. And so that's why we're in preparations right now. And also telling people as they come out to support and to let them know that to be ready for the winter, you know, prepare for the cold, and we'll do the rest. You know, we're at the Red Warrior Camp. You know, we provide 3 hot meals a day, along with, you know, snacks, the basics of what camping is. And so we, if you don't have sleeping bags, we have those. You know, warm gear, we have that. We're amassing all of this, so that way people come out here and they take that action of what gift that they bring to the table, of how they want to protect and defend. And so we're just looking out after everybody else to make sure that our creature comforts are met, and everybody's, you know, feels good. So, but yes, we are preparing for the winter as we speak right now. So.
And where do you see things with the Dakota Access Pipeline? Do you have a sense of what might be coming up, what challenge there might be, or is that kind of an unknown?
As of right now, we are still at an uphill climb with the latest thing where Dakota Access purchased $4.6 million of land, the Cannonball Ranch, where a lot of the protectors are camped at the sacred camp, where the burial grounds were disturbed, where the effigies that were discarded, and so we're really at a point now where we're still defending, but we ultimately will want this snake to be defeated. But we are at an uphill climb where people are now. The company bought land for which we, like I said, it's we're just at an uphill climb right now. So,
Earth Mom in North Dakota with Cody Hall of the Red Warrior Camp. The occupation near the North Dakota banks of the Missouri is a watershed for almost 20 million people and thousands of miles of land that opponents say is threatened by the pipeline and its potential for leaks. By this summer, nearly 200 tribes around the country had passed resolutions. They opposed the pipeline, and many hundreds of their members joined in nonviolent direct action to stop it. Meanwhile, labor unions are at odds over the pipeline. While the AFL-CIO came out to support pipeline constructions with a rationale that it's part of a comprehensive energy policy that creates jobs, the CWA, the Communication Workers of America, stands with members of the tribes who are fighting to protect their community, their land, and their water supply. Other unions opposing the stance by the AFL-CIO include New York State Nurses Association, National Writers Union, the UAW, the United Electrical Workers, SEIU, Border Agricultural Workers, and the Labor Coalition for Community Action. There's a petition by trade unionists and social justice activists calling on the AFL-CIO to reverse support for the Dakota Access Pipeline. Go to change.org to sign on. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, October 3rd, 2016. The news was produced with Matthew Wells, Richard Barr, Erica Lattis, Earth Mum, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.